man. How's it going?
Hey, it's okay. It's a nice day. Sunny, sunshine on my face, on my skin. So yeah, it's great.
Spring is here.
Yeah, definitely. Although they say it's going to go back to winter. So yeah.
Spring is here. Is your coat flourishing?
mostly, yeah.
What have you been working on lately?
Well, I've been working on this project for a few years now. We just delivered the latest release. And yeah, currently we are in a phase where client is still deciding and setting up this next release and planning on what we are going to do. So yeah, it's kind of like relatively slow and easy as opposed to when we are just before in a period where we were just before the release. It tends to be like that because it usually happens that when as you get closer to the release, you need to like finish up and test a lot of stuff approximately at the same time. So yeah, it's can kind of get stressful, but yeah, we managed to like do everything and deliver everything as we planned. So yeah, it's okay.
So you reached the milestone and it's a bit easier now.
It's always easy, yeah. when you deliver and everything went smoothly, yeah, it's a great feeling.
Yeah, so that's quite a big project you've been working on for the past couple of years.
It's a big project. I think we started working with the client in 2018, so yeah, 5-6 years now. Started with just a few people on mobile platforms, then also taken the desktop development as well a few years back. And yeah, we have a lot of people working on the project, and yeah, it's great.
But you didn't start there. You started on a much more smaller project, which you know you had to go through them so you could be on this one.
Yeah. A couple of times I was basically a one-man army, so there was like no QA, no PM. It was just me and the client, and no specific, like literally no processes at all. Almost it was just like what we are going to do. And we sync up like once in 2 weeks and decide what to do. I do everything as best as I can, and then we sync up again. They like decide if we want to change direction somewhere or something like that. Yeah.
And I mean, those projects are, I'd say, much easier, but they require much, you know, less things to be defined. You know, when we were doing the prep, you said, well, as you said now, you know, I'm a one-man army. You have to do multiple things as opposed to the project you're working on now, which is much bigger and you know, requires pretty much, you know, to have everything predetermined. So, you know, what you're doing, you know, this process had to be set up as opposed to the smaller ones where you usually have the client base is not that big. I'm not the client base, but the user base.
Yeah.
And the client, it usually you're constrained by time, but you're actually constrained by your budget, which constrains your time. And things there go a little bit differently. So how did it go for you when you started, you know, working on those smaller projects?
As you said, so there's time constraint or money constraint. And I mean, naturally, clients want their money to be put as effectively as it can. So, which means they want as many features as they can get. That means that basically you can't really have like dedicated QAs. You can't have processes set up as you may want to. You can't like spend time on writing unit tests, writing all kinds of tests. You end up in a state where you need to give your best to deliver the most bug-free code. That's what client wants. So in those cases, you like really need to think about what you can do to which can help you to do what I said, to deliver bug-free code without spending too much time. And there are practices, there are tools, there's stuff that you can do which can help you, which can help you basically without spending too much time. For example, self-reviewing your code, which is especially like important if you are one-man army, because nobody's going to look at your code. You are on your own. You need to make sure that what you're pushing is good enough, is bug-free enough. So yeah, you really need to it's tempting sometimes to like rush and develop and write as much code as you want, but yeah, that can backfire because you'll end up in states where you need to fix bugs or you need to like catch up on some other things. So yeah, you really need to it's worth it spending that time. It's not that much time anyway. You don't spend hours reviewing unless a merge request is like huge, but yeah, usually it's not. So it's a really good practice, one of the practices which can help you, one, to deliver good code, and two, to improve basically, because even as a young developer, as a junior developer, you may think like, okay, I don't have enough knowledge, I don't have enough experience, and I'm not even gonna notice anything doing the self-review. But it's not the case, because you are a young junior developer, you will most likely, certainly doing, you'll be doing like stupid mistakes, stupid bugs, leaving to-dos, leaving commented out code and stuff like that, which is really easy to spot and fix, change. So yeah, one thing, as you improve, as other people review your code as well, you will notice which points they are making, what's they are commenting on, and where you can improve your code. And then when doing the self-review, you will start noticing those things yourself. And yeah, it's gonna want make you improve, and you're gonna look better in the eyes of the somebody looking at your code, because they're gonna see, okay, look, Ivan is really improving right now. I only commented on this mistake once, and I've never seen it again. So yeah, it's really good practice.
And you get more confidence. I mean,
yeah, really. It's never a good feeling when you get a lot of comments on your code saying like, you could have done this better, you should have done this differently, or something like that. So it certainly is better when you get less of those comments. I mean, obviously, as you start out, you will be getting a lot of those comments, but that's natural. That's what you expect. So you need to like take those in and just learn from them. So once you like level up, you stop doing those mistakes, and yeah, your confidence will definitely grow.
Yeah, we mentioned self-review, and before we started recording, we talked about self-testing.
Yeah.
What's that actually?
Yeah, self-testing. So that's actually it's similar to self-reviewing, because you actually need to step back and think about what you just did, what you developed. What kind of code did you push? So what usually happens when you're developing, and I believe any developer can confirm this. So as you start developing a feature, you will mostly test it out doing the happy path. So once you finish up with a feature, you'll mostly be testing with the happy path. And that's okay. That's, yeah, you need to do that. But what you need to do as well is do the self-review, self-test, which is like, as I said, taking a step back and thinking about, okay, this is what I just delivered. This is the code I pushed. So is there any case or any chance that it's affected some other part of the app, some other screen or something like that? For example, you can usually, you don't hard code, for example, resources in the screens, but you have a resource file where you fetch those that information from. So for example, colors, if you don't hard code colors on each screen, you just define them in a resource and then change it there. So it may happen that you change a resource there and it doesn't affect just your screen, the one that you want to the change to be applied on, but it affects other screens. So yeah, you need to step back and basically test the app as a whole, I'd say, to see if you broke something elsewhere. And especially, I think you need to focus on like error cases, like what if server fails, or what if I lose an internet connection, or what if something else happens, server returns some junk data. Because those are usually, from my experience, those are usually cases where bugs happen, basically.
Yes, yeah, so you have to predict future to some extent.
You need to. Yeah, I'd say, and you get better at it as you gain experience.
One of the things, I mean, since those are small projects, and you mentioned that some things are not really that important, such as unit testing and CI/CD, and it's mostly because you really don't have time, because you really have to push the whole software, the whole app out.
Yes. So usually, it doesn't happen too often that you work on a small project and client is willing to pay you to write unit tests. So that's basically the case. You can't go against it, but I think there are certainly cases where it is efficient to write unit tests or a unit test for a certain function. It can be some kind of an algorithm.
How can you benefit from unit tests? I mean, how can the whole project benefit when you're unit testing?
It gives you basically regression testing. So once you continue doing other stuff, you basically make sure that the code that is unit tested won't break. Because if it breaks by some change, unit test will fail. So you'll know, okay, I broke my algorithm or something, and I need to go and figure out what's wrong and fix that. So yeah, as I said, there are cases where I think it's good, and it's good to write unit tests, because you can have an algorithm-like function which has a lot of cases in there, which are kind of hard probably to test manually. Maybe there are some error cases and stuff like that where it only happens when there's server failure or something like that. So unless you have a mock server or something, you can't really test it, but okay, that's a different point. Anyway, unit test will help you make sure that initially, will help you make sure that the algorithm that you've written actually does what you intended it to do. So yeah, there are, even though clients doesn't want to pay for that, there's still value, and I think for you as a developer to just make sure your function is doing what it should, because it's basically just the easiest way to test your code.
But when are the unit tests not actually beneficial? I guess when there's a bigger accent on UI than on backend, or if I understand that.
I mean, if you don't, if your app doesn't have, you know, if this system is really simple, then I mean, you don't really have to spend a lot of time on unit testing.
Yeah. I guess if you don't have as much business logic, there's maybe no point in having those, and you can have instrumentation tests, for example. So there are cases where, there isn't much value in adding unit tests, but it depends on the case, basically.
And if you're time constrained, of course.
Yeah.
If you really don't have time, you know,
if you don't have time, why? Because it takes, I think, approximately, it takes as much time. It takes as much time to write unit tests as it takes to develop a feature, maybe even more, depending on the case. So yeah, it's certainly something that clients are not willing to pay usually. So yeah, but definitely it's like per case, per project scenario where you need to decide for yourselves. Like, is it beneficial? Is it worth it? And of course, does client want it or not?
Any interesting stories from your past when you were working on smaller projects?
Yeah. There was actually one project which I worked on before I started working on this big one. So that's the one where I was one man army. So with those kind of projects, you get freedom, which is nice. Yeah, because there's no like process constraints or anything. It kind of feels like you're working on your own like a solo project, like back and home. So in those terms, it's nice, but it gives you a certain burden of like, okay, I'm the only person in charge of this. I'm the only person who's to blame if there's something to blame. It gives you that kind of burden.
You have a huge amount of responsibility.
Yes. There's definitely huge. Yeah, there's definitely a huge amount of responsibility, because as I said, you are alone, and you need to be disciplined, and you need to do the practices which I mentioned, which will then help you deliver like good code, basically.
Okay, so smaller projects tend to be simpler, usually have non-technical founders who founded the company and want to have, you know, something that's going to be rolled out as soon as it can, and they just want to, you know, make money as soon as they can.
Yeah.
On the other hand, they're enterprise level projects, which you're working on right now, and they're a bit more complex, actually a lot, quite more complex. On the first example, you know, I mean, the smaller projects, you have a smaller user base. Here you have a bigger one, which automatically means you have to make more complex system. You have to work on your processes and everything else. But one of the most important thing is defining everything before you start actually working on the project.
Yeah. That's one of the keys, I'd say, because if you don't define everything at the start, or most of the things, usually there are some change requests down the line, but you want to make sure that they are as small as possible. So yeah, it's really important to define everything at the start, because first of all, then it's easy to estimate, and from the starting point, clients will know, okay, this is how much time it needs to be developed. It helps developers they have an explicit specification on what they need to develop. It helps designers to also figure out how to define UX, UI. And also good practice is actually reviewing the specifications as well. I think it's quite important for all parties to review it, including like developers, tech leads, designers, and clients, because everybody needs to agree on everything from the starting point before you start developing, because you really don't want to end up like starting the development, like maybe spending months doing something, and then later down the line you figure out, okay, actually, I don't know, either it can be done, or we don't want this to be executed this way, or something like that, and you basically just need to throw all this time that you spent in the trash bin and then start all over again. And that's a huge loss. That you don't want to end up in that case.
And it's quite different. I mean, in the first case, so with the smaller projects, as I said, you have non-technical founders and you have somebody who's very technical. Your client's going to be technical.
Yep.
And they're gonna know what you have to do. You're going to have maybe a CDO or somebody who's really experienced, maybe from as a software developer, and things tend to go differently here. And were you, let's say, a bit afraid when we're starting working on a bigger project, or were you a bit more relaxed because you had somebody, you know, that actually knew what you had to do?
I think it's a bit more stressful at the beginning because it's kind of like it's a new area, new people with good technical knowledge, which will actually be looking at the code that you are pushing out. So yeah, it's definitely like pressure from that side, because you want to push code which is as good quality as it can get, because yeah, the point is that you want to keep on working with the client. And you don't want them to see, like, look at these guys, they're just too bad at what they're doing, we don't want to work with them. And it's definitely pressure from that point.
Yeah, I can totally understand that. And one of the things that's really different from, you know, smaller projects is code base and just the complexity of the whole system, where, you know, in the first, when you have a smaller project, you might have few subsystems. And here you have, you know, a wide array. So that's quite a different story.
Yeah. Usually on big projects, those are huge domains, and you really need a lot of time to actually start being productive, because it takes a lot of time for you to figure out, not everything out, but figure out like the higher level overview and how the application or whatever it is works, and you need time to actually get into the code, familiarize with it, and figure out what it's doing. And it's definitely more complex, but it's a good thing. From a developer perspective, it's a good thing because it gives you experience which you can't get with a small project. From that perspective, I think it's good. And basically, all the people or the colleagues I've been working on this big project, none of them actually worked on such a big project before. And initially, the comments are like, "Oh, it's a chore," like. Stuff like that, but after some time, after a few months, they realize why the processes are defined as they are, why everything works as it does. So they learn to understand, they realize that it actually will help them, and it helps them become more disciplined in what they do, even in small things like. Communicating stuff in a thread somewhere with clients, or like pushing some small document with some maybe proposed changes, and definitely the code you push. Yeah, you want to be disciplined about it. You want to self-review it. We even have on this project, we even have internal reviews. Because again, as I said, you want clients to see that you are good. So yeah, we do internal reviews to actually like remove all the bad stuff that they might see. So once it comes arrives that their way, they're going to be satisfied with it, and yeah, everybody's happy.
Yeah, and you mentioned you need to be disciplined regarding the code, and those bigger projects have stricter guidelines and standards.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I mean, naturally, as the project is more complex, it's easier to like make like be unaware of the stuff happening somewhere, and you can end up like going a route which will break something somewhere else, which is yeah obviously not what you want to do. So you need to be basically following the guidelines, and they're usually set up, I mean, at least in our cases, for clients, for bigger clients, bigger projects, they already had everything set up or almost everything. So we actually needed to figure out the important stuff, and basically to be able to, when we start developing, to be aware of such cases, and yeah, not to make mistakes which then need to be changed or revised when you are pushing merge request, because it's always merge requests are great, it's you need to review the code, but you want as much changes to be done after a change request. Because I've had cases where people sent merge requests my way, and like I figured that they went a completely different route, completely wrong route, and basically I needed to sync with them, and basically they needed to do almost everything from the scratch. So yeah, that's why I'm saying you need to like prepare and get as much information as you can before stuff comes to the merge request point, because that's already too late, especially in such cases where you have a tech client with technology which is going to basically look you through the through the lens of the merge requests you are passing their way.
Yeah, so that can be stressful, actually.
As I said, it is stressful at the beginning, especially since you are not like familiarized with the clients. But yeah, once we've been working from that client for years now, and yeah, we are like almost as everybody else in the code. Not really, but yeah, we are friendly already with them. So yeah, it's easy now. But at the start, it's definitely stressful because you don't know how they are. And it was kind of a slap in the face when we first, because especially as I said, I worked as a one-man army on one project before, and also on one project before that one, I also worked alone on a project. So once I arrived at that project which I'm working on right now, I thought that my code is like good enough and yeah, stuff like that. But once they actually started commenting my code, I realized that, oh man, I was not
you got in a higher league.
Yeah. Basically, I need to improve still. Yeah. So yeah, it helps you like improve more quickly, because as much as such reviews are painful in a way, because like it's shines that light on you, where you can see, okay, I'm not as good as I thought I was. It actually helps you like level up quicker, because if you are like fine, if you approach their comments in a good way, in a good manner, then you can actually improve really quickly. And the most important thing is that you basically don't repeat mistakes, because they're just gonna say like, okay, we already told you this, you know, 3 times, like what's going on? So then we're going back to the self-review, where you actually need to make sure that you don't make mistakes that they already pointed you out on.
Yeah. One of the things that might be easier here in bigger projects is testing and QA. Whereas, you know, when you're working alone, you sometimes, you know, have to do all the testing, all the QA yourself. So it's much easier on enterprise level projects.
Yeah, yeah. On such projects, on big projects, clients are aware of importance of having automated tests and QA engineers. So yeah, they're fine with spending money on that. First stage is automated testing, which is kind of goes 3 ways, I think. So it's unit testing, where you just test specific parts of your code, basically just functions themselves, the input and the output. And then there are instrumentation tests, where you basically spin up your application, and then through the instrumentation tests frameworks, which allow you to interact with your application. You basically, for example, if there's a login screen, you start up the test and write a script which will enter username, enter password, click the login button, and verify that you actually arrived at the main screen of the application. So those are the second one ones, and the third ones are screenshot or story shots, snapshot tests, which are kind of the easiest ones, because it's really simple, because you basically just want to take snapshots at a certain point in time, and save them as a reference. And then each time you change something, if it's unexpected, the screenshot tests will fail, because they will generate a new screenshot, compare it to the reference, and it's a pixel by pixel like verification. So if it's not exactly the same,
so you get a side by side comparison.
Yeah, basically you have the reference pool, and you create new screenshots, and then you compare them. So if they're not the same, the test will fail. They can fail because you actually made the change that is wanted. So you just need to generate a new reference file, reference screenshot. But yeah, it will definitely help you if, going back to that case with the resources, where you can have resource file, and colors or dimensions are used across different screens, and then you may want to change it on one place, and you end up changing it on the other place as well. So yeah, definitely in such cases, screenshot tests will fail and point you to that failure, and you will realize, okay, this change that I didn't want to make, and you'll fix the issue, and yeah, everybody's happy.
All the things that we mentioned, you know, coding standards, testing, QA, everything needs to be not documented. Not a lot of people like to write documentation. Not a lot of them like to read them, but it's really useful. You know, it's, you basically justify why you did something, you know, why you picked that block of code, and it actually helps the client. They can, you know, understand why you did something. So when were you working on smaller projects? You didn't write that much specification. There was much less, and now you have to write a lot more.
Yeah. On smaller projects, there's either no specification, or scarce specification, which definitely doesn't help you, because I like it when everything is specified, because it helps you understand easier, like what you need to do, and do the stuff that you want to do, that you need to do, and where there is specification, yeah, it's easier. So it's different. You need to kind of adapt on whether you're on this side or on that side, because of course on smaller projects you need to be agile, you need to be swift. So it's natural that you can't have all the processes, but in the other case where it's a big project, you usually need to do those. So it can be a chore, and as I mentioned, usually it is a chore for people at the beginning, but you like figure out that it's needed. And we have, for example, we have documentation for QA testing. So those can be pretty big documents where each step of the testing needs to be defined, like which user you're going to be using, what kind of config they're going to have set up on the server side, which buttons you're going to press, what is the verification that you're going to do. And then also that needs to be reviewed by the clients and by their tech leads, so everybody is on the same page, like, okay, this testing is good enough for this thing that we are delivering. And yeah, that's, for example, one case of the documentation that we write. The other case is, for example, it's a much smaller one, but we call it on this project whiteboards, where once you have a specification and everything is ready for development, you actually take some time to kind of do the proof of concept, sort of. And the idea is to use like a few days to come up with any questions that you might have, and maybe even some concerns that you may have. Maybe something is, maybe you think that something might not work as you expected. So yeah, you will write a documentation explaining all of that, and then you have a sync up, like whiteboard meeting with everybody included that needs to be included, and then you discuss that. And basically the point of that is to have another like a safety check to so it wouldn't happen that you figure out that something is not going to work way down the line, because as I mentioned, that can lead to a lot of time lost. So
I mean, it can be tiring to write something like that, but it at the end, you know, it can be very beneficial, as you said, you know, because you can lose time and money.
Yeah. Definitely you can lose time and money, and nobody likes that. I mean, it's this project that we are working on, they started as I believe as a small MVP project, and they initially didn't have many processes set up, but as they continued, as they acquired new clients and stuff like that, they figured that, oh, we need processes in place because, I don't know, we are releasing too many bugs, or it's happening that we figure out too late down the line that something's not going to work and we spend too much time inefficiently. So yeah, they basically built their processes as they went. So it's obviously something that they deemed worth it. So yeah, they keep doing that.
Yeah. Well, where can it get hectic on larger projects? And by that I mean, it's probably, you know, you decide that you're going to use one type of architecture, and then later on you realize that you had to, you know, you needed something else. And I know that you mentioned that one, you heard a story or something you read somewhere that somebody, they didn't have set up process or something, they had too much technical debt, and it at the end, you know, they it cost them a lot of time and money.
Yeah. I talked to a friend.
Yeah.
So yeah, they worked at that company, and I've heard that the course was in a such a mess that they needed so much time to develop the simplest feature. And in the end, they figured out that they are like, it's not, they can't go that way any longer. And basically they decided to write everything from scratch. So yeah, the technical debt can really be a bad thing. You kind of can't even like stop it in a way, but you want it to be as less impactful as it can be. So that's the point of specifying everything at the beginning, because if you specify everything at the beginning, you're gonna have much much less trouble down the line with technical debt. You definitely want to go that way. So, yeah.
I didn't ask you, what are actually one of the biggest dangers in working on small projects? I'd say, we had an episode about scope creep.
Yep.
Yeah, and that, scope creep, I think I have a feeling that tends to happen more on smaller projects because clients, are non-technical people who want, more, and it's just difficult to explain to them that, you need time and money to build this or that feature.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, it usually happens on smaller projects. And I think it's mostly, again, not specifying everything like properly enough at the beginning, but you start with some scarce info, some scarce documentation, some scarce specification, if there is any. And clients tend to like jump in the middle of the stage and like say, okay, can we change this? Can we add this? And then you're usually like, okay, it's a small change, we'll edit. Okay, it's a small change, we'll change it and stuff like that. And what ends up happening is that you figure that either you won't have time to finish everything in time, or it got too complex because the initial like architecture or initial setup that you wanted to have doesn't actually support the changes that you want to make now. So yeah, if you didn't think about these changes back when you were deciding which architecture you're going to use, it can be much harder than you actually thought about it in the beginning. So yeah.
What would you say to your younger self when you were just starting? What should you look out for?
Well, self-reuse is one of the things that I kind of figure out on my own, and nobody actually explicitly told me that, and that's why I keep telling that to people that I work with, especially younger developers, because, not to repeat myself, but yeah, basically I think that's one of the key points that will help you grow. Not only that it will help you grow, but it's important that somebody who's overseeing you, your senior colleague or tech lead or somebody, they will certainly look you through the lens of your code, and if you keep doing the mistakes they keep pointing you to, they're not going to be happy about it. And if you like keep improving and not repeating the same mistakes and only like doing new mistakes, which people are going to point you to, and then you'll learn about them as well, at some points you're gonna like spread your horizons wide enough, I guess, to cover a lot of like beginner mistakes, and other people will see you as maybe mature enough, is that the word?
Yeah.
Mature enough, then it would be that if in case that basically you didn't do the self-review. And it's really easy to notice, because it's really easy to notice when people are doing self-reviews or not, because when somebody pushes a merge request and then there are to-dos in there, or there are commented out lines in there, it's obvious that they basically didn't do the self-review. And it's a stain that's it's a stain that's so easy to like remove. So why not remove it? And I don't know if there's anything else.
What advice would you give to somebody who's just starting working on a enterprise level project?
Don't be afraid.
Yeah, definitely don't be afraid. I'd say, and I believe I do say that to everybody that starts working on that project, is that don't be too sad, I guess, about all the processes, because yeah, in the beginning you get a glimpse of all the processes, and it can be overwhelming at the beginning. All these specifications, all these documentations, all these high-level specifications, like so many things that you can think like, I'll never get there.
I'll never code.
Yeah, I could. But yeah, I try to explain to them that it actually needs to be like that because of the stuff that I've spoken to you about. But also that it will help them grow, and I try to make them believe that it will definitely help them grow, and then I sync up with them from time to time just to check on that, check if they actually if it happened what I told them that it would happen, that they would feel the improvement and feel that they gotten more disciplined and stuff like that. And it's always the case. Like, I didn't have anybody that told me like, get me off this project, like after a few months that they told me like, get me off this project, I can't do this. Most of them like say, okay, this is great. I'm really like grateful for this project that I was able to work on.
Yeah, I mean, so smaller projects, one-man army, bigger projects, you work with more people, but things tend to get more serious. You have to define everything before you even start working, define more clearly, things more clearly. And it might be, as you said, a little bit frightening and boring with all writing all the documentation and everything, but at the end, you know, all that's gonna help you become a better software developer.
It's gonna help you become better, yeah, definitely. And also, it's kind of a guardian because it will help you either if it's due to laziness or something like that. It will guard you from delivering bad code, basically, and delivering bugs, because we're all humans. We all make mistakes. We are all like lazy sometimes, and yeah, all the stuff. So those processes are there to basically stop human error as much as possible. So yeah, you need to basically look at them that way, and yeah, do everything that's supposed to be done.
It's lunchtime, so we pretty much might wrap it up. Thanks for coming here. I hope I see you again.
Yeah, thanks. See ya.
Bye.